Hey, everybody. We're back with another first-round bald movie. Tonight, we're talking about the 2018 Steven Spielberg-helmed Nostalgia Fest. Ready Player One, starring a bunch of people I've never really seen or heard of before, and Ben Mendelsohn.
Okay.
And a couple others I don't want to spoil in the non-spoiler section. I don't know, because you've read the book. Mm-hmm. Recently. You read a book a long time ago. You recently read it. I know you had some misgivings about the film. I've never really seen a lot of positive stuff come out about this film. So my expectations are very, very low.
Yeah.
And honestly, I thought the movie was fun.
Uh-huh.
I have problems with, like, the romance subplot, and I thought the ending was incomprehensible and ridiculous. But
okay.
Everything. It was fun. It was a fun. It's a lot. I saw it in 3D. I haven't seen a 3D movie in probably 2 years.
Yeah.
And I thought the 3D worked really well. And it's kind of like a fun theme park type of experience. Very similar to like the Avatar movie, mm-hmm. where it's like, I don't know how much this makes sense, and I don't know what it's trying to say, but I'm having a good time watching it. Jim, more immersed in the Ready Player One experience, what did you think?
It could have been a lot worse. And I think it actually would have been worse had they stuck closer to the book, because it's very, very different.
That's what Cecily said, because she's read the book too, and she said that other than the premise itself of this Easter egg hunt, almost everything else has changed.
Yeah. I'm going to talk a lot more about it in the spoiler section, I'm sure, but yeah, if you go into this expecting the book Ready Player One, which why would you? Because it's A, not a great book, and B, it would not translate to the screen well at all.
Uh-huh.
Then you'll probably be disappointed. But
I read some passages, because people were quoting some passages in some of the like criticism of the movie or like discussions of it, and like some of the passages in isolation are pretty what I would call cringy.
Yes. Yeah, there's a lot of cringy stuff in the book.
There's a lot of cringy stuff in this movie, honestly. Not nearly as much. I did find myself surprisingly unmoved by the nostalgia. Like, mm-hmm. I was expecting, like, oh, the Iron Giant, because, like, that's one of my favorite movies of all time. And I tear up every single time I watch it. I'm like, there are some nostalgia bones, funny bones that they could hit and make me feel certain ways. And I didn't really feel, there's nothing. I don't know. There was, I was surprised at some of the omitted IP. Like, there's a big deal earlier this week where people were criticizing the movie for not having Star Wars in it, and Spielberg said, oh, there's Star Wars in it. Because, like, how the fuck
there is, but
it's a,
yeah,
it's a mention.
Couple of references. I saw somebody in Star Wars garb. That's about it.
Yeah. I was expecting, like, the Millennium Falcon, not the Millennial Falcon.
Oh, Millennial Falcon.
Millennial Falcon. The Millennial Falcon is not my Falcon. I was expecting to see something or something to, like, but it is more of just, like, there's so much of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the Blu-rays will probably be fun because they'll catalog every single freaking reference, but.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I didn't think I thought it was going to be a lot more annoying and up its ass than the movie actually was. I noticed on the while I was taking the elevator upstairs to the Bald Tower that it's got it's boasting a 78% on Rotten Tomatoes, and I feel like mid 70s is about right for this movie.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I know that's not, again, because I get emailed this occasionally. It's not. 78% fresh does not mean that it's 78% good or something. It just means 78% of the people who saw the movie had positive feelings about it. Mm-hmm. That feels like about right.
Yeah, and I don't go into this expecting like an amazing Steven Spielberg movie, because I don't think this is one of his better ones.
No,
like not even close.
And I shudder to think
it's better than it should have been, honestly.
I shudder to think what this would have looked like had the director from last week, the Pacific Rim 2 guy, gotten hold of
Christ.
It.
Christ, yeah.
Like Steven Spielberg knows
Brian
what he's
De Palma.
Doing.
Yeah.
He knows what he's trying to do. He knows what beats to hit in the film. And the other thing is, I think he gets away with you connecting a lot of dots that aren't really there, because maybe I just lacked a proper appreciation or mindset coming to the film. But again, like I'm going to have you help me with the ending.
I'm really curious to see if you can describe the plot of this movie to me, especially as it comes to like the end of it.
Yeah. And the other thing they did is they cast it spectacularly. I thought all of the five core cast members were very winsome and
five. Yeah.
Yeah, and they all had their like little cool hook. I thought Ben Mendelsohn, as he does every time he does it, plays like a really good villain and a very particular type of villain. Mm-hmm. But he's still really good at it. And the world I thought was more interesting than I thought it was going to be. Mm-hmm. But the other thing is, I guess I thought I was going to walk away with a particular feeling about VR and the internet and gaming and how the film feels about it. And I felt like that was a little bit murkier.
And it doesn't say anything that hasn't been said before. Like there's nothing new in this movie.
Yeah.
Which might be just exactly what Ready Player One needs, because it's about nostalgia.
Yeah.
Trying to give a new message to people who haven't thought about virtual reality probably wouldn't work.
Right. Right.
And it was a little bit weird because they modernized things from Ready Player One. Ready Player One is a book all about the 80s nostalgia. Mm-hmm. Late 70s a little bit.
Yeah.
But like, they do a lot of modern day references in this. Mm. Like, there's a reference to Twitch, spoiler alert. Mm. There's like a reference to Overwatch and Minecraft. Like,
yeah.
They modernize it in a weird way, which doesn't quite work to me because the whole premise of the thing is about this 80s nostalgia. Yeah. Maybe that's just old man Jim talking, saying, I don't want the new stuff in my.
Yeah.
But I don't have a problem with the new stuff. It's just, it didn't feel right for this movie.
I thought that, because I mean, my idea of the world is not the whole world is obsessed with 80s culture,
right.
Which I thought would be very bizarre, but like the central character and a few of his type are very steeped in it, and like he didn't really break, like the main guy never like throws on a tracer skin from Overwatch, or he's not like he's not driving a Warthog from Halo or anything. He's very 80s, so it's like everybody else. Mm-hmm. I thought, you know, honestly, it's like if they didn't do that, like my son would probably get more references than most because I started him off with the classics, like the Jousts and the 2600 games and the Moon Patrols and the Space Invaders and shit. Let's just make this an 80s nostalgia mm-hmm. cast. Let's
how
just
many work in your list?
Let me
Tempest,
let Pitfall,
and Pac-Man, and Burger Time.
Yeah,
and,
Combat. Yeah. I don't know.
But it's strange to me because the fans of this book are people who I think that might actually turn off for the most part.
Really?
Yeah, like when you get a 40-year-old dude in there thinking he's going to get an 80s nostalgia fest, and throw in a bunch of Overwatch and stuff, I think that has the potential to turn off a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. I don't know, because I felt like that it wasn't just an 80s fest. It was a very particular 80s nerd fest, because this guy talked a lot like I remember nerds in middle school talking. And I don't know if they still do this, honestly, because I feel like, my old man version of modern nerd culture is it's mostly gone mainstream.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's not as, like you certainly still can find the, like, socially awkward people, but, like, you know, everybody likes Star Wars fucking now. Everybody likes video games. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, some of the more popular Twitch streamers are as broed out, weightlifting, mm-hmm. Guys who would kick sand in your face are like, you know, the stars, some of the stars of the modern video game craze. So like, I guess it felt of a piece to me because the movie is certainly shows the like Back to the Future, Atari 2600, REO Speedwagon, next. It's got primacy. Like that is the capital and the culture of this world.
Yeah.
But it also says, hey, look at all this other stuff. I wish maybe a third of the references were just like gonzo shit that Spielberg and his developers are like what would video games be in like third, like what are some cultural references that we can just invent?
Yeah.
Because
and they do that in the book, but they didn't seem to do that in the movie at all.
Because that felt very weird because it's like our culture got put into like a time capsule in 2018 and there it's kind of like Star Trek when like, okay, everyone is fans of like Bach and Beethoven.
Good music has been made in the ensuing 200 years.
Right. Like it's all 16th and 17th and 18th century composers and fuck, you know, country and blues and R&B and jazz, except for Riker, I guess, fucking likes Dixieland.
He does, yeah.
Son of a bitch. Everybody else, like, you know, none of that stuff. So, like, I felt like I wish that they had maybe taken 15% of the references and just made it be, like, weird shit. Like the character of H, I thought what has a very cool, like, steampunk orc design. Mm-hmm. And I can imagine him being, like, the protagonist of some video game 10, 15 years from now. And I guess I kind of wanted to see more of that.
Yeah.
Just to show that, like, you know, this is an evolving world. But, no, like I said, I didn't expect to like this movie. I thought I was going to be like, oh, god damn, another fucking disappointment. But, no, it's this movie was good. Not great.
It was, yeah.
Not great. And, again, you know, if you got to grade this on a curve because this fastball is pitched right down my plate. Mm-hmm. Like, this is like the song of my people. So I thought it was good. Like, if you don't have any kind of nostalgia for this kind of stuff, or, you know, I read an interesting article by a woman that had seen the film, and she liked it, but she's like, what would the dominant internet nerd culture make of a movie that fetishized female 80s? Like, what if it was all about Jim and the Holograms and My Little Ponies and Care Bear and She-Ra and all this other shit? I bet, like, it's weird that this is not just like an 80s fest. It's a very male-centric 80s fest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so is the book.
Yeah, and like it's like, and I'm my honest reaction is, oh my god, fucking r/movies would be hating this so much and be how stupid this fucking shit. What is this Care Bear blah blah? And like, but you know, this unapologetic male 80s fantasy is a 78% Rotten Tomato.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. And the book has a little bit of that via the character Artemis.
Mm.
Probably even more so than this movie does, honestly. Uh-huh.
Because she's
kind of surprised by that.
She just liked everything that everybody else liked.
Yeah.
Like, the cast is eclectic and diverse, but they are all unified in what they think is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Except for maybe the Japanese kid likes, like, you know, Japanese anime stuff a little bit more. That was
probably
his, like, signature nostalgia move. But everybody's like, you know, everything's video games and the 80s and stuff is cool. Do we have any other non-spoilery thoughts?
I just think that the world building is actually pretty good.
Yeah.
There's a lot to pack in there, and they don't do it exactly like the book. Oh, my God. But they do it pretty well.
Is there a reason in the books that they mention that Columbus, Ohio, is the fastest growing city in the world?
Yeah. Well, I guess maybe they don't do a great job of explaining that in the movie, but the idea is that is where the Oasis is headquartered.
Oh.
And so everyone wants to be there to get a fast connection to it.
I see. Okay.
That's why.
Okay. Actually, that makes a lot more sense because I was under the impression the Oasis headquarters was some other place.
No, it's in the same city.
Because, like, a couple times characters exclaim, how did you get here so fast? And it's like, oh, you know, they always give some bullshit cockamamie answer. But, like, if everything's happening in Columbus, Ohio...
the center of the universe.
Things are looking up for Ohio. Going to be a hotbed tech. We missed on Amazon HQ2, but we're getting Oasis.
Right.
Pretty sweet. Pretty sweet.
Yeah.
Pretty sweet. I wonder also, could you ever have, like, I'm really curious because like Google and Microsoft and Apple have done something I'd never seen before, which is like kind of stand the test of time.
Mm-hmm.
Like they've spanned generations now and have kind of been on the top of their respective games. I thought for sure that like Google, you know, they might have some, but there would be a new like a search engine or there would be a new thing. And there's been like Facebook and Twitter and now Twitch and all this stuff. But like, I guess it always struck me as wildly unbelievable that a tech company could maintain like a stranglehold on the culture's like, you know, mind share for more than 10 or 15 years. And like this movie postulates that what is the game? It's Gregarious Games.
Mm-hmm.
This VR interface has essentially maintained sway from like 2020 to 2045. It's the dominant internet entertainment thing on the planet.
Yeah.
I thought that was kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we're seeing that. I mean, if you look at, like, the Industrial Revolution, right? We've still got plenty of companies around from then.
Sure,
But, so I imagine, like, once things get more established in the internet age, we'll see companies that just monopolize it, like Google's and Amazon's.
Right, but they're like
just
like,
don't ever go away.
For example, IBM's been around forever, but they're not like what IBM was, I don't know, at the height of the Cold War, at the height of World War II or the Cold War or whenever they were the fucking...
Yeah.
Before Microsoft started cloning their shit. I don't know. I just wonder if that is going to be... Like, will Google and, like, will Twitch, like, will Twitch become ESPN? So, like, 35 years from now, people will still be playing or watch it. I guess I've always expected something new and better to take its thing's place. And then here Facebook is, like, 10, 15 years later, and it's, like, you know, it's having some other problems, but, like, its popularity doesn't seem to be one of them.
Mm-hmm.
But, I don't know, it has nothing to do with the movie. Do you have anything else you want to talk about, or should we get to the trailers?
Not in the non-spoiler section, though.
Yeah, probably lots to talk about in this non-spoiler or the spoiler section. First things up, Adrift, which is, we were looking ahead to the Bald movies of the summer, and I saw the Drift. I'm like, what the hell is Adrift? And it's like, oh, it seems interesting. A tale about, I guess based on a true story about a young couple who is sailing to Hawaii and they get hit by a typhoon and they get dismasted and like all this other shit and they have to like, you know, sail, you know, single-handedly with a busted boat and no radio or anything, like 1,500 miles in the open ocean. And I thought it sounded interesting. And you're like, eh, what did you think after you saw the trailer? It's got Shailene Woodley, is that her name? Cheyenne Woodley?
I don't know who she is.
The Divergent girl?
Divergent?
She was the girlfriend of Edward Snow, or Snowden, in Snowden.
Vaguely remember that movie. Yeah, it looks fine. I mean, it's... I don't know. It's an adventure movie, I suppose.
Yeah. For me, it's like the hook is like it's a sailing film and it's based on a true story. So I think that's like, you know, piques my interest more than most.
For me, that's one that I would be like, oh, it's on at 2 p.m. in the afternoon on TV.
Right.
I'll
just watch
sit
it.
Through it. Yeah.
Moving on. Have you seen this version of the Deadpool to the final Deadpool 2 trailer?
I hadn't seen this one. It was good.
Yeah, it was like real good. And in a way that like I don't feel like it gives away all the best parts of the movie because every single time they roll out a trailer, first of all, they invent a whole bunch of new material that's not going to be in the films at all. It's just like weird one-off trailer shit, fourth wall breaking shit.
Yeah.
But like, I just have like really a lot of confidence in this creative team to like, we could show you 15 minutes of this movie and it wouldn't be at all.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just going to be chocked full of stupid shit. So I'm pretty excited for it. That's definitely going to be a Bald movie, and it's coming up pretty quick, I think. What do you think about The House with the Clock in Its Walls?
That's a stupid name for a movie.
Yeah, it reminded me of like if someone let Tim Burton direct a Harry Potter film.
Yeah,
it's just,
and they cast Jack Black as the lead.
It's just full of dark whimsy and weird stuff. It left me pretty cold.
Mm-hmm.
And you hate her fantasy probably even more so.
Yeah.
Ocean's 8.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if we've talked about this before. This is the premise of this. Sandra Bullock plays the sister of Danny Ocean.
Okay, so she is an ocean.
Yes.
Okay, that makes way more sense with the title. I was like, are they going to do this weird thing where like George Clooney is the leader of this pack of women
No.
and he's like he's the eighth or something?
I would not be surprised if he doesn't make a cameo towards the end, though, of the movie, or at some point, him and Brad Pitt come crashing in with Matt Damon. But I don't know. It looks fun to me. It's essentially Sandra Bullock, Danny Ocean's sister, just getting out of prison and recruiting a super team of female criminals to knock off the Met Ball?
Dude, it was incomprehensible. I could not
they're
follow this trailer.
They're stealing a $100 million necklace off of Anne Hathaway's neck is what they're doing.
Okay. All right.
I thought it looked entertaining, and I also realized that it's like, why Ocean's 8? Because they can make
it's
Ocean's 8,
people,
9, and 10 without stepping on 11, so they can do a three-part trilogy, and it would fit, like, you know, you'd have two trilogies with the female and the male. I don't know, it looked like fun.
And Disney will buy it, and they'll finish out the third one.
Sure, they'll give it to Rian Johnson, and he'll ram Sandra Bullock into Julia Roberts.
Oh, God.
At light speed.
It would be beautiful, but it would make no sense.
He doesn't care if it destroys wrecks Oceans 11 through 13. Why does he give a fuck? And then finally, I don't think you saw this final trailer either, the final Avengers Infinity War trailer.
I've seen Captain America grab Thanos, his hand.
I don't... That's the one thing in that trailer that I'm like, the fuck? Like, I get it. Captain's a badass. But Thanos is like a demigod. Like, I don't expect...
I've never seen needles in Doctor Strange face before.
Yeah.
How did he get in that situation? How does Doctor Strange get into any bad situation for himself?
I don't know. All I know is that it looked like the illustration of, like, a two black mill deck mana card thing. Like, you know, it's like tap two black. Pull two cards out of your opponent's hand, and there'd be Doctor Strange on his knees screaming as black needles are piercing his brain. But yeah, it's like some of that stuff is like, I don't know. Like, I get it. Like, you know, they've always found ways to play around with that. Like, Thor goes to smash the captain, and he blocks with his vibranium shield. And who the fuck knows? Because you got this vibranium.
It's made up things.
Yeah, it's collapsing. But like, yo.
This is what I love about fantasy, by the way.
I mean, he's Cap's superhuman, but can he get, like, I don't think he could arm wrestle Thor.
Right.
And I think Thanos could kick Thor's ass if he's arm wrestling. So, like, I don't know how all that works. Maybe there's, some kind of, he put a Infinity Stone up his ass or something.
Man, I'm just interested to see how they bring every character into a single movie. Because it was, I mean, they did it in Captain America. Like, they
but
were able
to
incorporate
degree.
So many characters, but I don't know how they're going to do
it. I thought it was going to be overstuffed when it was just going to be the Avengers and the Guardians, but now that they've brought, like, Ant-Man and Wasp and Doctor Strange and Spider-Man and, like, everyone, the Black Panther and all of that entourage, like, Black Panther already expanded the Marvel Universe by, like, 18%, and all that stuff's coming, all the vibranium rhinos and all that stuff is coming back. It looks nuts. Like, the contract negotiation alone to make this shit happen is crazy. And it has genuinely, that's the other thing I wondered how they would do when they got to Infinity War, is how do you do the genuine excitement you feel as a comic book fan when, like, all of your heroes are together and fighting as one? Like, you can do that in a comic book. You can have all these bits and pieces overall, but they've successfully fucking brought this story together, and will they fuck it up? I'm very curious. Doesn't look like they will. And that's it. That's it for the trailers. That's it for the coming upcoming movie talk. We will be back. Is it next week?
April
6th?
6th for Quiet Place.
For Quiet Place, which is it looks like a cool high concept horror film about a family being stalked by a monster that can only be attracted to sound. We were excited about the trailer, I think, when we were talking about maybe Annihilation. And it is upon us. So that's going to be our next first run bald movie. Stay tuned for that.
All right. You ready for spoilers?
Oh, am I?
Okay. What do you want to know?
Explain the plot to me, first of all. Okay. So some autistic programmer created a virtual reality world and got all fucked up and greedy and kicked his best friend out of the company, which was one of his lifelong regrets. And before dying, he'd kind of become a hermit in this VR thing. And before his death, he left an Easter egg in this game where someone who is steeped in the lore that was important to him and could figure out all these clues, could find these three keys that would then lead him to a location where he would get the ultimate Easter egg, which is essentially Willy Wonka's golden ticket. You get to own the VR world, which is now the number one company in the world. And Ben Mendelsohn leads this rival company, this offshoot company. He used to be, I guess, a intern for Gregarious Games, IOI, which is trying to take the Oasis and whore it up. Like, they did this simulation POV where, like, 73% of the view screen that was covered by ads, and you could just see, like, right in between the round, and I'm like,
before people start to go into seizures.
Right. This is the human limit of what the mind can stand as far as pop-up aggressive ads, and it looks like a nightmare. And he's trying to find the keys first so he can take over the internet and be the number one company instead of number two company in the world.
monetize it like crazy.
That's about right, right?
Yeah, everything except for Halliday getting fucked up and greedy. He was fucked up, but he was jealous.
Jealous of the fact that Simon Og. Pegg still had a life outside of the world?
No, that he, well, kind of, yeah, that he married this woman, Karen, I think is her name.
Yeah.
Karen Underwood.
Uh-huh. But I felt like the movie at the end peeled that back and said that wasn't really the thing. It's more the fact that he sacrificed their friendship. So,
yeah.
But
yeah.
He sacrificed friendship because of jealousy.
Right.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's what I didn't get.
Yeah, he got jealous and he forced Og out of the company.
Right. But it seems like they also had some genuine creative differences. Like, you know, Og was skeptical about whether people should live on this thing 24/7. And the other dude was like, no, man, it's cool. The real world sucks. And
yeah, there's definitely a message in there of like, hey, the real world is good and we should probably live in it.
On Tuesdays and Thursdays. Yeah. Everything else, fucking be online. Uh-huh. Such a weird... Okay, so here's what I don't understand. The end of the movie... Ben Mendelsohn has stopped at nothing to become the most powerful man in the world. And it's this moment where, you know, Neo's still in the Matrix and the fucking robots have cut into the Nebuchadnezzar and they're just about to rip his rib cage open and Trinity kisses him. And but what happens is Agent Smith himself is standing over Neo with a gun to his head, and Neo finds a fucking Easter egg that makes his hands glow in the real world, and this guy's just standing around in VR like a dumb fuck, and Agent Smith gets a look of wonder on his face and doesn't pull the trigger.
Yeah, it's pretty
stupid.
That
is a completely Deus Ex Mendelsohn. Mm-hmm. Like, that was not in line with his character. I thought it was horseshit.
And I feel like they could have done a couple of really easy things to make that work in the end. Like, what if, you know, remember that scene where he's got the people talking in his ear where he's trying to convince Wade to
I'm a cool 80s nerd too.
I know all my 80s. Right. I can make the references.
Right.
And if they had him like shut off his thing and then go into that and prove that he actually was like really up on the 80s stuff and
he
was a big fan and kind of a cool guy, but he was kind of doing his job the whole time, that would have paid off totally at the end.
Yeah, I don't understand why they made it seem like if you're an 80s nerd, you are virtuous and good, which I know for a fact is not true.
No.
Because there's a lot of 80s nerds that are fucking assholes.
Yeah. But I mean, it's the thesis of this book. Like, this book's whole idea is, hey, the 80s were awesome, and everybody who loved the same things that I loved in the 80s are awesome, too.
I think
that's, like, who Halliday was. In the book, it's weird because he's not, like, he's not really trying to make this big point, as far as I can tell, like, about, this needs to go to somebody who understands that people outside of the Oasis matter, too. He wants people to understand who he was, which is a little bit less cool, I guess. Like, it's definitely more focused on that 80s idea.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I thought knowing that, like, I felt like they missed some resonance there because if Mendelsohn was just essentially an 80s nerd who grew up, sold out, and lost his way, but still was able to be touched by, like, a genuine, like, seeing someone have a genuine, pure experience, like, that he might have had at some point.
Mm-hmm.
But they really aggressively move away from that.
They could have done that with the internship, too. Like, they had all the opportunities there.
Yeah.
If he just was really cool during the internship, they could have shown that, and it would have been so much better at the end.
And the other thing is, if they wanted to go away from that, I legitimately thought they were going to set up some kind of betrayal by the finale. That, like, she was, like, she's named Finale, and I'm like, oh, she's going to be big in the third act. Like, come on, that's, like, you know, Chekhov's gun. And there is this, like, weird tension throughout the third act of him being, like, deciding he wants to be a commando in real life, and she's, like, a real life, like, oh, you leave this to me. And I thought she might fuck him over because he's going to, like, try to get in this combat situation, and he's completely outgunned and over his head, and she just ends up saying, well, fuck you, I'm going to work for this kid or something like that. But just to have Ben Mendelsohn pussy out, if I use the vulgar phrase, like I don't get it. Nothing in his character says that he would have done anything but gun that kid down in cold blood.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
my only guess is that he realized it was too late. Like, even if you were to shoot him, he's won the game and he's found the Easter egg.
But the movie made it very clear that, like, oh, yeah, all that bullshit holograph stuff and that's no, there's actually legally binding paperwork you will sign in the real world to make this thing. So, like, it wasn't really. Because, like, if he had killed that dude, he could have come and completed all the keys and beat it at his leisure because the kid fucking annotated how to beat it in real time throughout the whole world. I don't know. Like I said, the ending I thought was just like Spielberg is like, I don't know. We want a happy ending. So here you go. Here you fuckers go. We all love the 80s, right?
I mean, it could have been worse. He could have had a walkie-talkie in his hand.
Or E.T. comes and like the guy gets killed and E.T. touches his fucking chest in the Matrix and brings him back to life. Yeah, this movie certainly could have been worse.
Oh, yeah.
But I also got to bust its nuts a little bit for two things. One is the ending not making any fucking sense and not flowing from the action. And two, I really thought the love story was horseshit. Mm-hmm. And I thought the movie was like...
The book is probably worse, actually.
I thought the movie was agreeing with me, because, like, you know, when he tells Artemis he loves her for the first time, it's lunacy. It's
ridiculous. He's known her for 10 minutes
in
the Oasis.
And she's saying as much, but then, like, the first time they meet in the real world, it's like... I don't know, man. I thought there also when we see her from the back, she's wearing a sweater and her hair is like, I thought it's like, oh, it's going to be, she's going to be like, you know, like some kind of frumpy woman that he's not expecting. Instead, she's a conventionally hot girl who has like a port wine stain that just makes her even more interesting and exotic. So like, yeah, two beautiful people that barely knew each other meet in real life. And it's like, I'm like, oh, why are you leaning into this? Like, it's a kind of a kid's movie, but they're not really kids. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm too old for that shit. But I just thought, like, that's not a great message to send to a lot of kids that are watching this movie and are experiencing this online. They're meeting people in chats and they're meeting people in parties and they're, you know, getting catfished. And Spielberg's like, that's cool, kids. Follow your dreams.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's
they
weird.
Probably
the
won't become nightmare. Yeah.
In either this or the book. I think they did a couple of smart things, like changes that they made to it.
Yeah.
Because in the book, there are not only three keys, but there are three gates as well. So you end up with basically double the challenges. And it just kind of takes too long to get everywhere.
Yeah.
And it works all right in the book because the book isn't that long to begin with.
Right.
But in a movie, that would have really slowed things down. Yeah. So they did away with the gates entirely, and except for the final one where he goes in and I guess he has the Willy Wonka
keys,
challenge.
Yeah.
And at the end, it was weird to me because the final gate took three people to open in the book. But in the movie, it just took Wade.
Yeah, because everybody got killed except for... Which I kind of thought that
they
was...
They streamlined the Og stuff really well,
yeah,
though.
Also, that's the other thing, is, like, I didn't understand the Og stuff because I thought Og had been kicked out of the company, and yet, upon the founder's death, he's able to backdoor himself a starring role in the game that he had no idea was about, and he could give a token of such vast power to someone. Like, I felt like there was a lot of hand-waving of how that fucking happened, too.
Yeah, I mean...
Like Bald Move from me and like we didn't speak for 30 years and then like when like you die and like Bald Move is in receivership but there's like some kind of podcast challenge. No, I'm not there at the fucking golden coin, kids. I'm gonna be like, spit on this asshole. Like, you know, it's like it didn't like where was his motivation in all this? That's like
I don't know about the movie.
Yeah, like I wouldn't be surprised if there's 45 minutes that they cut from this movie because there it seems like there's big chunks of connective tissue that you have to kind of like. The movie works if you want it to work and you don't think really hard. But like, if I turn my critic brain on, there's a lot of holes and stuff that just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, they did a pretty good job with the loyalty centers. I think that's a piece of world building that I thought was pretty cool and done pretty efficiently.
Sure.
They at first I thought they weren't really going to explain it, but then they bust in on Artemis and haul her off and kind of explain the whole thing. Like,
right. So if
once you get indebted to the company for whatever reason, they take you there, and they have you doing tasks working off your dead in the Oasis.
No, that's something that humans have to try every 100 years or so before we realize how a shitty thing it is. Debtors' prisons, right, company stores. Yeah. Like, yeah, we just have to, like, you know, take our eye off the regulation ball a little bit, and then it's like, hey, we can essentially backdoor slavery into civilization.
And 2045 super sounds cool. About right for that.
Yeah, no,
to
it's,
hit
it's,
next.
Yeah, yeah. It's super, super we're due. We're due. We're due. There's some assholes right now in some think tanks thinking, debtors, you know, when people just, like, we fine them and they can't pay their fines, why don't we just throw them in prison? And they can't earn any more money, so they'll just be there for the rest of their life. And
yeah.
And the state will pay us to house them, and yeah.
I mean, that's some poor people's lives right now.
Yeah, no, right.
Parking tickets and shit like that.
Yeah, stupid shit. Gotta be vigilant against that.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that's just kind of a cool idea in the Oasis. I can't get over the depiction of VR, though. Like, the idea that people would be running down the streets with headsets on.
Right.
Interacting with a fake world within the real world.
Yeah, and they,
like, none of that makes any sense.
They broke their own rules because you have these...
You have the treadmills.
Yeah, two-axis treadmills and all that stuff. Like, that all... Like, that's shit that we're almost there.
Right.
So, like, they establish that all this is a fact, and in fact, the heroes are going around in these fancy suspension rigs and all this stuff, but then at the end when he calls, I mean, it was a cool visual to see all these people in helmets holding fake guns, like, running down streets and doing all this, and, like, it gave a lot of kinetic chaos to, like, tracking them down, but it does break the universe's own rules.
Absolutely.
But it was cool, so, like, I'll allow it.
I guess.
I'll allow it.
The other thing is, there's the moment. So there are a couple things that I really like in the book a lot better. Like, the way that the Cataclysm gets used in the book is so much better because it's something that's mentioned early on as a Chekhov's Cataclysm.
Is it a doomsday weapon?
It just happens at the end. Like, it doesn't. Nobody goes, haha, it's a 3-step process and watch me do it. And here's 2 steps. Oh, now we're gonna fight. There's none of that. It's more like. Wade goes up to start his final challenge and he just everybody's dead. And you go, oh shit, yeah, right. That's a catalyst thing. Or
because
a cataclysm
Mendelsohn
thing
did that.
Yeah. The movie it's a little bit ridiculous in my opinion.
What do you think of TJ Miller's role?
I think TJ Miller, I don't like him anymore. He does the same thing in everything.
That's
he's
the thing.
In,
the first time I saw his character in Silicon Valley, I really enjoyed it.
Yes.
But I now realize, and I actually thought a stand up from, like, what, 2 years ago was not bad. But, like, holy shit, that's him.
Yeah.
And it kind of works in that, like, this arrogant, like, super nerd, like, you know, kind of semi pathetic, lives online. South Park's take on World of Warcraft way, but it also, like, really pulled me out of the movie when his voice came out of, like, the, you know, one of the main, like, it's like Darth Vader. If Darth Vader had TJ Miller's voice, like, but that's the kind of movie this is. There is a lot of silly shit that doesn't make sense. It's may or may not be awesome, but
I just don't like the distracting force that he is in a movie. Like, not just his voice and realizing, hey, this is that guy, but he's actively trying to derail the conversation at every turn.
Yeah.
And the only way they get through that scene is Ben Mendelsohn pulling him back 5, 6, 7 times in a single scene. And it just... I'm feeling the exact same thing that Ben Mendelsohn is I just want this conversation to be over.
Right, right.
Like, that's not a fun experience for me as a moviegoer.
Right, yeah. What was your favorite piece of nostalgia?
God. I mean, I did like the DeLorean, seeing that. Because that's...
Seems like a pretty central part of the book, too.
It is, yeah. That's his vehicle in the book as well.
Right.
Once he becomes kind of famous. I don't know. I mean, there was so much of it, I have a hard time picking one out.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, I was surprised that, like, I thought from the early stuff, it's like, well, if Iron Giant kicks even a little bit of ass, that's going to be, like, my favorite.
Actually, I thought of one.
Okay.
The Shining. Oh, that Shining scene was
that
done
Shining
so
stuff
well.
Was super cool.
Yeah,
and you can tell, like, Spielberg, like, that's hollow ground for him.
Uh-huh.
Like, he really wanted to take the torch from Kubrick and be kind of like the I don't think he's actually made it. Like, I'm not going to take anything away from Steven Spielberg because he's a genius in his own way, but he's not
making the same kind of movies.
He's
though.
Not Stanley Kubrick.
No.
And when he tried like AI, when he literally took Stanley Kubrick's notes and tried, like, I really like AI. I think it's really effective. It's really, you know, it really did a number on me when I watched it. But I still don't think it's like what Kubrick would have done with it.
Yeah. That's the thing. I
but
feel
you can
like
tell
they,
that that's super cool to see someone that's reverent to the material, and it like they like. I mean, I don't know how they fucking did it. Like, whether they actually built all those sets and filmed them in 3D. I mean, and it was so because I've seen like post 3D stuff, and it always looks kind of fakey and gross. But this stuff was like all of a piece. I mean, they had to have done it all digitally or. Like that Overlook Lodge is perfect, and the blood and how all the characters seamlessly interacted with it. Yeah, that was really that's a good one. That's
yeah,
a good one.
That was great, and it's not in the books. All of the challenges are different except for one. The adventure challenge is actually similar, but everything else was new. So The Shining came out of nowhere for me, and I was like, hell yeah!
All right, yeah.
And the way that they kind of. I mean, they know their shit. Like, they are the Wade Watts of this universe when they're making it because they're like, oh, a creation that the creator hated, right?
Right.
Like, Stephen King hates The Shining
movie. He sure does.
He hates it so much
that he
had another Shining movie made later on.
Yeah.
Trying to do his own
TV
version of it. Yeah.
Didn't really work.
So when they went that route, I thought it was awesome.
Why does Stephen King got to make his movie on made for TV? Like, if Stephen King comes up and says, like, 20 years after fact, look, I'm fucking Stephen King. I don't like how this Kubrick guy did with my movie. Give me $100 million and my director and let me pick a cast and make... Who says no to him? Why does he have to go to, like, fucking ABC
know,
or whatever and, like, make a made for, like... It's, come on, man. Because I agree with having... I think the movie's awesome, but there's a lot of stuff that makes the book really pop and really frightening and really tragic that Kubrick was not interested at all in capturing. So I understand why... You know, Stephen King felt like there was a lot left on the table. But yeah, damn. I guess like my favorite moment was probably the kid transforming into the Gundam.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Not because like I like, you know, Mobile Gundam Strike Command or whatever the fuck it's called. But it was just super cool to see like this giant robot fighting this giant mechanized Godzilla and like doing all the moves. And I thought that was super cool. But like, it's so weird that was my favorite piece, and it's like really far removed from my nostalgia wheelhouse. Most of the stuff kind of left me cold because it's everywhere, and I felt like they could have done more of the Iron Giant. Like, has anyone ever seen the Iron Giant? Do you know his powers and capabilities? Like, why is he losing fingers at the end? He should be able to like I just feel like there's I don't know. I didn't
do your Iron Giant fandom service.
No. It's like they just used it. Like, he could have been a Gundam suit, or he could have been Robotech. There was nothing, you know. He could have been fucking the Big O or Mighty Mighty Orbots or whatever you want to. He could have been any like Voltron. It could have been like there was nothing special about Iron Giant. I felt like the Iron Giant sure to deserve something. There's also a lot of cool details on the like. It looks like that. There is the Knight Rider shit inside the DeLorean.
Yeah. Yeah, he had it specially modified. But
I
they
can't
don't
believe
say
that
in
pay
the,
off. I was expecting to hear it talk to him at some point.
Right.
You know, because, like, that would have been a super huge nostalgia boner for me because I'm a giant, you know, giant Knight Rider fan.
They do. In the book, they do a lot of war game stuff, which I was looking for to see.
I felt like they did leave a lot of 80s stuff on, you know, like Stephen King on
Here's
the table.
Here's how I feel that this movie was made. They said... What licenses can we get? Okay, now let's make the movie. Let's write the script.
You're probably right.
You can't write that script relying heavily on these very central plot points being this specific game or this specific movie.
No, you're probably right about that.
They probably reverse engineered this movie.
And there's a whole bunch of stuff that's in the background. Like, you know, to me, a lot of big part of the 80s in retrospect was like all the R-rated action movies. Mm-hmm. And the only really... glimmer you get of that is there's like a RoboCop that's like off to the left
left stage at some point.
I didn't see him.
Like, there wasn't the Predator. There wasn't any, like, really Arnold Rambo kind of, like, nods. There wasn't any, like, Chucky. Like,
Chucky, I saw Freddy Krueger at one point.
Oh, was Freddy there? Because I was looking for, like, Freddy and Jason. And I was looking for an
Chucky
alien.
Was pretty good.
I was looking from the alien. Although, I guess the alien did make it. There was, like, that gag with, was it Goku? Who's the fucking...
Goro?
Goro. Yeah. Goro from Mortal Kombat. So, also, like, I guess I was expecting maybe some more 80s computer game nostalgia. Because that was, you know, a big, like, if you got this big kind of, like, movie that's about hacking and computer, I guess it wasn't really, but, like, there was almost nothing that I saw that was represented from, like, the Commodore or Amiga or even early IBM scene.
Yeah, the book has a lot more of that. They played through Zork as one of the challenges.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, I guess you couldn't get the, or maybe that's, like, a little too deep of a cut.
Yeah.
Because that's, like, you know, like, how specific do you get to your nostalgia? Do you, like... you know, hang out in, like, what looks like to be a 1980s BBS message board? Like, how would you even show, like, years of my life are spent that way? But how do you fucking get across that in, you know, I guess you have nerds fighting about nerd culture stuff.
Yeah.
But...
oh, they didn't do much with it, but I thought the holy hand grenade was kind of cool, too.
Yeah, that was neat.
That was a good reference.
That was neat. That was, like, it's so weird because, like, in the very first in the movie, this guy is such a weirdo loser kind of in everything about his affect and his character aspects. And I felt like at some point in the movie, it never was really earned, but he just became kind of a badass.
Yeah.
Like that he went from being told he was the one to being the one, and there wasn't like a catalyst. He didn't visit the Oracle. He didn't have to sacrifice himself for his mentor.
They needed a montage. They needed a training montage.
They could have done a montage, or they could have had that like moment where, I mean, maybe like I'm supposed to understand him pulling the gun. Oh, that's the other thing. Super missed opportunities for the guns in the world. Where's Han Solo's DL-44? Where is the Nintendo Light Zapper?
Right.
I shat bricks when the guy pulls out a like this fantasy gun and it doesn't look like any fantasy gun. It could have been Boba Fett's gun. It could have been a Stormtrooper rifle. It could have been Han Solo's sidearm. It could have been RoboCop's gun. It could have been like anything.
I think I saw the Gears gun, the chainsaw.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I think Artemis tried to use that on TJ Miller at some point.
There was a lot of that, like, rail, like classic computer like, or console
TJ Miller,
weapons.
Did he have the BFG? Is that what that was?
I don't think so.
The big skull on the front of it?
That's not my BFG.
Shit, what game is that from?
I don't know.
It's from something that I can't place.
But yeah, like, there was some of the like cool bits of that. But I was also kind of surprised that there wasn't, like, signature sound effects or signature, like,
scores.
I did
hear a little bit of some Back to the Future sneaking in there.
Did you?
Every once in a while, yeah.
What was the victory music for... the car race? Like, I thought that was starting, that was threatening to start up into like the throne room celebration music from Star Wars, but it never quite got there. And I'm like, but yeah, I was expecting to hear, like, I don't know, like when they pick up money, it sounds like Link picking up rupees in Zelda or stuff like that. Like the shit, easy shit like that they didn't
or maybe
do
some more 80s music. Like, there were only a couple of tracks.
Yeah, not that could have been a really hot soundtrack, and they didn't really go, they didn't try to out Baby Driver. There was also, like, I'm trying to think of other aspects of nerd culture. There wasn't really any representation of role-playing games or board games.
Which is also weird because the book is heavily into that.
Yeah, and I thought, like, I don't need to see much, but, like, maybe, like, there's a gaming cafe where people are playing, like, the awesome version of Dungeons & Dragons, like, on these big boards with, like, animated characters and stuff. And I don't know. Like, it's like, if you're going to go beat someone's nostalgia boner, you know, do a good job of it. Use some lube or whatever. I don't know. What else do
there's
we want to
there's
talk about?
one thing that they don't go into in this movie, but
okay.
I think the world after this movie ends is pretty much fucked, because I think when they set off that cataclysm, they caused a worldwide economic apocalypse.
Right, they
essentially
just, like, all that fake
everything everyone has on their character, all their money, all their items, which are at this point, Oasis coin is like real world currency.
Sure.
People are buying pizzas. People are buying shit with it.
It's all red. And like,
and
you can see
everybody
that in the...
who was on that planet died and lost all of it.
Right. The only thing is, I guess that like everyone is in that experience universally. So like from a gameplay mechanic perspective, it seems very exciting to like everyone got. Mm-hmm. It sucks if you're the only one that got reset.
Yeah,
to zero, level zero. But if everyone got reset at the same time, it seems like it would, you know, ignite everyone's imaginations or maybe rekindle. But I don't know. Yeah, you're right, because
I mean, it's
that is an economically devastating thing to do.
Yeah, what if one of the major banks just had every single person's account wiped to zero overnight? No hope of recovery.
Why couldn't the guy who owns the Oasis just revert to the last backup? Like, yeah. That would be super easy. That'd be super easy.
They don't touch upon it.
It's
but,
also weird
but that is
the Oasis
event.
Shuts down on Tuesday and Thursday. Mm-hmm. So if you have to work Tuesdays and Thursdays, fuck you.
Yeah, I guess.
Like, it's such a weird, arbitrary thing. Like, and I don't, it's, I don't know. It always rubs me wrong when you have to protect people from themselves.
Yeah.
I mean, I know you sometimes do, but like, it just seems an odd tacked on thing that like, essentially what we need is a mom to set an egg timer on her video games and just arbitrarily say, you can't play no more, Timmy.
Yeah.
To make sure that people like unplug and go outside. I don't know. I don't know what. That's what I'm saying. Like, I really felt like the lesson that the movie wants you to take about living your life online seems like it is muddied.
It is, and because, like, I mean, it starts off with them falling in love online. Like, he doesn't fall in love with what she looks like. He falls in love with who she is and what she acts like.
And
that can happen online.
And as she's saying, like, you're only seeing the things I want you to see. And, like, this is not how I act in real life. And, like, all that. Like, that shit's all super valid. And it just swept under the digital rug.
It is valid, but it's also not valid, right? Like, you can tell whether or not you like someone online by the way they behave. By interacting with them.
I think personality over time, wise, yes. I don't think within a day of
meeting
them.
No. Okay, this fast forward. This okay. is a fast forward button okay. on that. But I'm saying, like, its overall point is not true that you can't get to know someone online.
Yeah.
I fully believe that you can get to know someone deeply online.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And
I've honestly, I have had the privilege of meeting several people years after I met them online.
Yeah.
Sometimes decades. Like, I didn't meet mm-hmm. Ian until like 10 years after we first met online.
Right.
And like, it's like we had been friends the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how that works with romance, since a lot of that is tied up in like people's physical appearance and whatnot.
Right. It's
but
a little
like,
different.
I just thought, like, I don't know that it's the same shit as Twilight. It's showing a very bad way to view relationships and putting it on a pedestal. Like, you know, my problem with Edward from Twilight isn't that he's like a pretty boy, sparkly vampire, you know, whatever, sprightly sprinkling through his shit through the forest. My problem is he's like a fucking abusive stalker boyfriend.
Yeah.
You know, like, my problem with these people is not that, like, they're gross together or whatever. It's the fact that, like, if I'm a dad and my son's like, I just met this girl online and I want to meet her, I want to go across the country to meet her in real life, I'm gonna be like, hold the fucking door, man.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, what the, this is insanity. And
maybe do like a hologram conference call first. I don't know.
Yeah, but I mean, there again, if I go back and critically look at every piece of 80s, like,
yeah,
romance aimed at teenagers, it's all shitty and bad.
Yeah, absolutely.
And what terrible life is.
It's John Cusack standing outside your window with a boombox.
In
like,
the rain, yeah.
Yeah. It's sappy, it's shortcutted, it's
yeah.
bullshit. Like,
yeah.
That's the vibe they're going for, I think.
Yeah. I don't know. So maybe it's, yeah, that's just me hating on the younger generation's bullshit relationship. But it's emotional pornography, boys and girls. Don't, it sets unrealistic expectations. And not necessarily to be followed as a manual. So, okay. I don't have anything left to say about this movie.
No, I'm good.
We will be back whenever the what is it? The Quiet Place? Hush?
A Quiet Place.
A Quiet Place. We'll be back for that for the next Bald movie. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.